Welcome to PSQH, the podcast. I'm your host, Jay Kumar, editor-in-chief of PSQH. On this episode, I talked to Mary Jagam of Centrac about preventing workplace violence in healthcare. And now, on to the interview.
I'm joined today by Mary Jagam, principal consultant for Centrac. Welcome, Mary, to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Before we get started, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about yourself and your background as a nurse.
I'm an emergency nurse by background and worked for many years in a clinical setting, both as a staff nurse and as an emergency department manager. So did that for about 25 years or so, and then did some independent consulting for a little bit and have been working in the area of real-time location systems for the last 15 years. I also had the opportunity to be the national president of the Emergency Nurse Association back in 2001, which led to some other opportunities as well. I was part of the Institute of Medicine study on the future of emergency care in the U.S. health system, and you know, a few other things like that at a national level.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about workplace violence in healthcare. I mean, I think it's no secret that it's a problem, but how has the problem of workplace violence in healthcare changed over the last 20 years or so?
That's a great question. So back in 1995, when I was practicing in North Dakota, I actually helped to get past legislation in the state that made it a felony to assault an emergency department worker. So violence was a big issue back then as well. It's only gotten worse over the years. Unfortunately, a lot of states still have not yet passed similar legislation to make it a felony, as well as, you know, it's been slow to see the support from some of the healthcare organizations themselves, the hospitals, to really pay attention to this issue and make it a priority. That has definitely changed over the last 20 years. I used to hear lots of horror stories, especially when I was president of ENA, from nurses who would get assaulted at work and got blamed by their hospital for that, and sometimes were even fired, which is ridiculous. And so that, you know, I'm glad to see that that attitude has changed, but still some hospitals lag behind in their emphasis on it. I think federal organizations, you know, such as OSHA, you also see it from the Joint Commission, have also changed their perspective on it. I remember when I was doing that independent consulting work, I was actually a subcontractor to the Emergency Nurse Association, working as a registered federal lobbyist. And I walked into OSHA for a meeting one day on this topic and kind of got a little bit blown off, you know, at that time. This is probably 2007-ish or so. And so that, I think, has also changed, which is really good to see the attention to the issue, the Joint Commission, you know, emphasis on it in terms of safety. You know, we're also seeing, again, looking back at the hospitals, promoting that culture of safety. I think what's also, what's still lagging behind is a lot of the documentation and data behind it. You know, a lot of nurses never reported incidents because it was considered part of the job. So changing that mindset, you know, for nurses was a big first step. And then changing the mindset of the hospitals as well, that that was important information that needed to be captured. What were the after effects? Did they end up going to court? Did they have medical injuries that needed treatment? How long were they off work? Did they quit their job because they were too scared to come back? All of those things have been really slow to get captured in terms of the data. So we really understand the scope of the issue. And then when we, you know, implement things to try to curb the violence and keep nurses safer, how do we measure, have we been effective in doing that? So it's getting there, but I think that's probably the biggest thing that's still lagging behind.
Yeah, I know OSHA is working on a workplace violence standard specifically for healthcare. Why is it such a problem in healthcare more so than other industries? What are the factors that kind of create that?
Sure. A couple of different things. You know, one thing I learned my years in the emergency department is that the emergency department has one foot in the hospital and one foot in the community. So it's ever happening and not going well on either end of that impacts the emergency department, which is, sits in the middle. So as violence increases in society all around, that's going to flow over into the emergency department and the rest of the hospital as that follows through with the patients. So that's one piece of it, I think. The other piece is that the environment, especially, you know, my world in the emergency department was patients were under stress, families were under stress. You've maybe got alcohol involved, drugs involved, behavioral health issues, and it all kind of comes together there in a very intense environment. People die in the emergency department. Families aren't happy when that happens. So they may threaten, you know, nurses or physicians as a result of a bad outcome. So it's a very, you know, intense kind of place. And the other thing that hospitals are really challenged with is they have to give a perception of being welcoming to their community, mm-hmm. right? You're welcome here. We're a safe place. We're going to take care of you, right? At the same time, they're dealing with all of this other stuff, you know, and how do they keep that environment safe for both staff and patients, you know, but yet keep it open, right? It's kind of this really difficult balance that hospitals have to maintain.
Definitely. So what needs to be done to stem the tide of workplace violence?
Well, I think number one is the hospitals have to make it very clear that this is a priority for them, that they will not tolerate a zero tolerance environment needs to be a must in healthcare. So if you don't adhere to that zero tolerance, you're out, which is a tricky thing because of some of the federal laws around especially emergency care, but it still can be done, you know, that patients can be escorted out of a facility when they don't behave well and don't, you know, become violent as a result of that. So that's number one. And that's zero tolerance for violence and the culture of safety has to come from the top down in the organization. I have to make it very clear. We care about our staff. We want to keep them safe and give you a safe place so that you can take good care of our patients, right? So that attitude has to be pervasive all the way down. I think that staff need to be a part of the solution in the hospitals. They need to be engaged, you know, in what happens around that. And and in addition to that, you know, there has to be, as part of that culture of safety, really a good risk assessment, you know, done by the facilities, right? They have to understand where their risks lie. And that's where that data collection becomes so important, because if things aren't documented, they didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that information has to be documented, collected, analyzed. Where are risks? What do we need to do to mitigate those in terms of policies, in terms of security staffing, you know, resources for the staff, what all needs to happen around that? And then I think also, you know, there's a lot that technology can do. That's kind of, you know, where I come in with the job mm-hmm. that I do. But technology, whether it's metal detectors at doorways, or it also has to include screening of ambulance patients, right? You can't miss the other door. If you target the front door, we'll have to make sure you catch the back door where the ambulances are coming in. So both patient populations need to be carefully screened to prevent weapons from entering. And then providing tools for the staff to call for help when things start to escalate, right? I think that's a piece of it. As well, also training for the staff, both the clinical staff and the security staff, so they know how to, you know, contain a situation, de-escalate, you know, keep people from getting hurt, both the patient and the staff, right? If an incident erupts, right, how do we keep everybody safe? And what do we do? So there's lots of those kinds of things, I think, that are important. In addition to that, I think outside the hospital is another piece of it. So even where you've got laws in place to make it a felony to assault a healthcare worker, you still may not have support from law enforcement or from the state's attorneys to prosecute or district attorneys to prosecute. And those kinds of things are also important, because I still hear stories from nurses saying, yes, you know, and I wanted to file charges and the police wouldn't take the report. They poo-pooed it, threw it out, wasn't important to them. And that's not okay. either. So one of the things I used to do when I was managing the emergency department was I held a couple of times a year a law enforcement luncheon. And I lived on the border of North Dakota, Minnesota, invited in all of the law enforcement agencies from both states, you know, police, chief, sheriff, you know, head of the highway patrol, all invited to lunch. And they came because what I offered them on the hospital side was hospital administration, media relations. You know, we had pharmacy, we had social services, security. We had all the folks that they wanted to talk to, but it was hard for them to connect with because we talked about a lot of things. But one of the things I did as a part of this was I gave every person in the meeting a copy of the state statute that made it felony to assault a healthcare worker. And I said that the hospital, if a nurse was assaulted, the nurses would be filing charges. And I expected everybody around this table to support that. And nobody said boo, you know, and we actually did get really good support. But I think those liaisons outside of the emergency department are also a piece of the pie. So,
what are your thoughts on, obviously security plays a role, security staff plays a role in this? You know, I know there's been debate over arming security officers in a hospital and, you know, whether that's appropriate or not. What are your thoughts on that?
We discussed this a lot when I was in my leadership roles in the hospital setting. I think it would not be a good idea to have a regular weapon, like a gun, you know, that fired bullets. I don't, because there's too great of a risk of staff getting it out of their, of patients getting it out of their hands, and something really awful happening, right? So I don't think that's a good idea. I know we did at the time, our hospital security guards were becoming trained and armed with tasers. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an option, but it's something that really has to be carefully thought out and done probably in conjunction with law enforcement as well as to how you're going to handle that. But, you know, if you identify an erupting situation, you know, sometimes you see things percolating, right? And if you can get enough bodies in there and contain and control the situation, hopefully none of that is required, right? But it is really, it's tricky to implement at that and to make sure you're implementing it safely so you don't create greater risk within the hospital.
And you just mentioned it, but surveillance, you know, kind of keeping an eye on, you know, who's coming in and sort of, you know, trying to spot those problems before they, you know, maybe happen is the key as well. So I guess that's where the sort of training comes in for staff, security and staff, and just knowing what to look for and how to, you know, kind of stop it before it gets, you know, really bad.
Right. And that's where, you know, the staff duress badges that we provide for staff, or they've got a button they can call for help. They can do that when maybe things, you know, are starting to get a little high anxiety, you know, in the encounter, right? So they can get additional help in there to contain it before things erupt. So I think, you know, providing those tools for staff so that they never feel alone is very important, because I remember that feeling. I remember it very, very well, especially being a young new grad in the emergency department. I was scared to death when I worked nights. And it's very scary. You're down at the end of the hallway with a patient. Nobody else is around, perhaps, you know, and you try your best to keep yourself safe, but something could go wrong in that situation and you might need help and not have any ability to call for it. So that's why it's really important to me, the work that we do, you know, to providing those tools for staff so that they have that, you know, safety to know that there's a way that they can get help when they need it.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the technology side. You know, what exactly goes into those? How do those work? And obviously, you know, you mentioned the ED a lot, but, you know, if you're in a more isolated part of the facility, like you said, you know, things are less obvious to other people that maybe you're in trouble. So that's where something like that would come in handy, where you're able to alert somebody.
It's correct. You know, you can be almost anywhere. Again, I always think about the night shift, just probably because I work so many nights myself. But, you know, there's less staffing right around. And sometimes maybe even not an emergency nurse, maybe it's an x-ray tech taking a film with a patient, and all of a sudden they do something unexpected, you know, and they don't have any help with them, you know, right? So the technology that we implement uses Gen 2 infrared. We basically create an indoor GPS network in a facility, and the staff wear a locator badge that has buttons on it, and they can use the button to call for assistance. And it automatically sends an alert right immediately to security to notify them of which staff member and where they're exactly where they're located. Pops up with a nice map view and everything so they can find them. In addition to that, we can send out local alerts too. So maybe we maybe we set off all the mobile phones for the staff in the area at the same time. So that local alerting is important because probably it's going to take security. They're not right there. It's going to take them a little bit, right? But maybe if three of your colleagues can come in, you know, you can start to get the situation under control. So that's where that local alerting is often really important to the staff as well.
How did the pandemic make the issue of workplace violence even worse?
You know, it had already, from 2011 to 2018, they'd already seen a 63% increase during that time frame. And that's where we did really see, just from my perspective as a, you know, working with the hospitals, we did see, especially like around the latter part of that 2017, 2018, really attitudes around this technology really started to change, and staff duress was becoming number one. And then it went into overdrive during the pandemic. I think, you know, pressures and anxiety on everyone's part was elevated. And the stress within the hospital was very intense, I think, for both staff and patients during that time frame. And I think that contributed to it. And it's just continued to escalate after that.
And also, you know, in addition to sort of the workplace violence that's faced, you know, from patients and visitors, there's also staff on staff violence that can occur that obviously is a lot harder to, you know, certainly if you're a nurse and, you know, and you're dealing with somebody who's higher up in the facility than you are, there's pressure not to report or not to, you know, to do anything about it. So, you know, how do you sort of get that under control?
Well, I mean, you have to really tell the staff that that's something that they, it's okay to document. It's okay to report. And we are seeing that change as well. And it's actually, we, with the sites that I work with, we have some very specific reporting options when security is closing out an event, right? And one of them is staff on staff violence. Mm-hmm. So that if that is a cause for the staff calling for security's help, it's documented. And we can, with those statistics, then we can start to elevate the issue with the organization. And, you know, especially, you know, if there's a particular staff member that it's a frequent cause of that, right? You know, those issues can be addressed. But staff have to be given permission. That, again, is organizational leadership, top down, right? If that happens to you, it's okay. If nothing bad's going to happen to you, but we need to bring that to the forefront and call out that that's not acceptable behavior.
I mean, obviously, you know, we've been talking about how big the problem is. Are you seeing attitudes changing so that, you know, you're hopeful for, you know, the future 10, 20 years down the road that, you know, maybe we'll be turning things around in terms of violence in healthcare?
You know, what's hard about that whole thing is that it's hard to stop it, right? It's hard to stop people from being violent. I think making it okay, like I said, to escort folks that are inappropriate off the premises with no ramifications to the hospital, I think that's an important thing that needs to be okay for them to do. I just don't know. I think that's a community issue, probably, to stop violence more than the staff being able to, or a hospital being able to stop it. But what the hospital can do is to make sure it's clear that it's unacceptable. And if you violate that, you're going to be, you know, removed. Or, you know, the other thing is, you know, again, making sure that the staff know that they've got a way to get help. And that we try to do early alerting on that. So try to get that help to them before something becomes extreme, right? If you can get it during the early stages before it really escalates, then maybe we can prevent a big issue. What we focus on is that, number one, we want to keep staff from getting hurt, right? That's number one. Number two is we want to help document what's going on, right? Provide the data for it. And most importantly, probably of all, is that the staff know that the organization cares about them and they care about their safety. That's probably actually what should be number one on my list. Because I think that's very important. And what we are starting to see, we try to do data collection around staff perception, which is a little bit challenging, but we're working on ways that we can, you know, do quick surveys with staff and get that feedback from them. And what we are starting to see is a correlation between staff feeling like the organization cares about their safety and a decrease in staff turnover because of staff not feeling safe in an organization. And that's gold, right? That's what we want. We want to make sure that we're helping that organization promote that cultural safety and help the staff feel safe at work so that they can provide good care.
Because, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, staff turnover retention has been a huge issue as well, especially in the last couple of years. Because of all the stress and involved, you know, just in day-to-day tasks, not even talking about violence, but I think, yeah, having your administration, you know, basically have your back is a huge thing for
it's a folks, huge right? thing.
So yeah,
it's a huge thing. If organizations in this day and age, if organizations are not doing that, they will lose staff.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that you know, things keep improving on that end, at least. So, you know, like you said, you know, the violence isn't necessarily going to go away, but I guess how you deal with it can get better. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been, you know, very educational, and hopefully, you know, hopefully, like you said, we can make a difference here.
I hope so too. Thank you for your attention to the issue.
That wraps up episode 102 of PSQH, the podcast. You can find more information about the show and listen to on-demand episodes at psqh.com. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get podcasts. Thanks again, and stay safe.